Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Oh, boy. He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? Dada.
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, Senior Lakers Insider for Clutch Points. And today in the show, you control it. It's a Sunday. We're back to our usual, Monday. Well, it runs on a Monday in podcast form. But we record these mailbag episodes on Sundays. And now that I'm back from vacation and fully acclimated back here and back here at home, we are right back to our usual schedule. So today we are going to be diving into everything that you guys want to talk about. And I asked Twitter for some questions. There's still plenty of room in the mailbag if you guys have any questions and you guys are watching live. So if you're on YouTube, hit me with a YouTube comment while we're live here, and I'll answer questions as best as I can while I see them. And then I checked the iTunes mailbag. It was empty. So that's, as a reminder, if you guys want your topic covered here on the show, the best way to get it on the show is to leave it in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes. So, we're going to go ahead and dive on in and, see where the mailbag kind of takes us. Quick reminder, if you guys are watching live right now, hit that like button. If you guys are watching on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge. And whether you're watching on YouTube or watching on Twitter, hit that subscribe button. Whether it's on Twitter, you can follow me at Anthony Irwin LA, or on YouTube, which is again youtube.com/@LakersLounge to find the show there. And then if you guys are listening in the morning to the show via podcast, please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that 5-star review button and help the show out that way. The best way that you can help out the show, if you guys are ever interested in so doing, is to tell your friends about it. If you have other Lakers fan friends, you could say, hey, I've been listening to this Lakers pod. If like in your friend group, out of nowhere, and I used to do this. So I would have, back before I started doing this, I would have other Lakers fan friends and we'd have a group text and we would like compete for who would get what news into the group text first. So we could all talk about it amongst ourselves that way. And if your friend group just starts to notice, wow, you're way ahead of a lot of this stuff, what's going on? You could just tell them, well, listen to the show. This guy's a bit of a doofus, but he seems to know some stuff every so often. And you could tell him youtube.com/@LakersLounge or Lakers Lounge, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. All right, let's go ahead and dive on in. And again, I'm starting with Twitter here because iTunes, that was empty, and I'm waiting for some comments to kind of pile up here on the YouTube stream. So starting with Twitter, let's dive on into the iTunes mailbag. All right. So backstory on some of these questions. I asked for questions today at 10:04 a.m. And I had a few questions here about the basically it's an extension of the conversation from Friday. So First one here, at 2 weeks with pay. Do you ever feel duped by the Lakers when they say they're working on trades that seem to never materialize, or is your BS meter always on high alert with this regime? Another one here, I don't know where it is. I had a couple other questions here, basically asking what it's like, you know, kind of asking for a bit of a method behind the madness, and it is madness, type of explanation for how this goes. So I'm not going to get too far into the weeds because, you know, talking about journalism isn't the most popular kind of topic out there. Unless I'm talking this, I've had a lot of positive feedback about the conversation I had with Pete. And if you guys like that one, you guys will like not this next episode of the Great Western Forum, but the one, two episodes from now, when we'll dive even further into that and actually get some different input from different kind of voices, from around, NBA journalism and coverage and stuff like that. But you know, we'll start with that question in particular. Do you ever feel duped by the Lakers when they say they are working on trades that seem to never materialize? So here's the thing. The way that teams kind of handle conversations about players is they are pretty constantly in contact with each other. Whether it's about a single player, whether it's about what's going on with that team, whether it's about what that team is maybe hearing about what other teams are maybe trying to do. The intel, the circulation of news and intel in the NBA, it never stops. Even as we head into later into August and then into September, when you're reaching kind of a dead period where most teams, you know, give the go ahead to people to go on their vacations. Even then, there's texts and emails and phone calls or meetups and stuff like that. People bump into each other and stuff because these really, really rich people like the same types of vacation spots. And there's just this constant information flow between teams about players and situations and trade scenarios, etc. There's even more conversations within organizations about teams and players and trade scenarios and outlooks and all of that stuff, whether it's about their own players or other players that they might be interested in. The way that, the Lakers kind of, or most teams map out or they handle their scouting is they'll tell somebody, all right, you're our West Coast region scout, you're our mountain, Midwest, scout, East Coast scout, Northeast scout, European scout, African, African scout, Asian scout, like all of these, Chinese scout, Japanese scout, like all of these countries and regions and stuff like that. Most teams basically employ people and they tell them, hey, you're going to be focused on this thing here. And we want you to be as informed, not just about every player there, but about every situation that might unfold beginning there. Right. And, now the Lakers, obviously they don't have as robust a scouting department, especially in the professional ranks. But there are certainly a lot of people around there, around the organization who monitor things and there's constant communication, about all these things. Like one of the things that kind of blew me away, and has blown me away as my career has kind of, progressed, and you guys can probably relate to this too. The longer you spend in companies or the higher you rise in companies, the more your time is devoted to just meetings and emails and phone calls and catch ups. You become, it almost feels like less productive the higher you rise in these companies because you spend so much time talking to people about being productive or ways to be productive. And essentially, like, you know, when somebody asks, do you ever feel like you're duped? No, because I think one thing that we should probably get a lot better at is understanding the meanings of words or you know, it's called media literacy is kind of like the big term devoted to this kind of practice. But when I say, like, yeah, I'm hearing the Lakers are trying to do X, I always try to, you know, I always include that term try. They are trying to do, they are attempting to do this. And I've said this in the past, but I like to talk about developments as I hear them, because to me, it kind of, it allows us to outline the process. It allows us to, you know, you guys to track the process, what went into whatever thing that the Lakers eventually did or didn't do, right? And, you know, that article that I just narrated for, I think it was Friday or whenever it was, where it's like a look back at the offseason in its entirety, you know, because of my reporting on things as they were happening, that article becomes really easy to write because, yeah, it's a lot of information, but it's a lot of these things that are always fresh in my mind. And every day, you know, you have a group of people that you catch up with and you ask, like, hey, how's it going with, you know, if they have a better understanding of various stories or angles and stuff like that. You kind of reach out. You ask, like, hey, how are you hearing things are going with Portland and the conversations that Rob is having with Joe out there? How are the conversations going with so-and-so and those conversations that Rob is trying to have there? And I maybe at some point in my career, I might move to, you know, talk about things when they are closer. But to me, I just think it's worthwhile to give you guys information on what the Lakers are trying to do as they're trying to do that stuff. And it's funny because inherently teams try to do a lot more things than they actually do. So when you ask, like, if I ever feel duped, no, because, like, the only time I felt duped this year was by Brooke Lopez's camp when it was becoming clearer and clearer that, or at least in terms of the conversations I was having, it was becoming clearer and clearer that Brooke Lopez was going to, it was thought that that Brooke Lopez was going to the Lakers. And as it turns out, one, the Lakers saw Brooke Lopez as a taxpayer mid-level exception player, which was about five and some change, right? $1 million. And Brooke Lopez wanted more than that. And there were other teams, obviously, that Brooke Lopez was talking to. And as we were getting closer and closer and closer to free agency, Lopez's camp start pushing Lopez as a potential Laker to try to get some other team to offer more than the mid-level exception, because he knew he would already have that lined up if he went to the Lakers. As it turns out, right, Lopez goes to the Clippers and he makes like $9 million, which is almost twice as much as the Lakers were prepared to offer. And it winds up working out for Brooke. Not saying I was lied to, not saying, you know, it was nefarious. It was all an attempt to get Brooke a few more million dollars on what will probably be his last contract, worth more than the minimum, I would imagine, if he doesn't retire after this current contract. And that's just how this ecosystem kind of works. Now, I do wind up going back and asking people, like, hey, you know, you could be more upfront on this stuff. And now I'm going to trust some of those people a little bit less because I now know what they're kind of capable of. But at the end of the day, I have to be a little bit better at my job and have those red flags thrown a little bit more quickly. Even when the, you know, everything is pointing towards one outcome, it's always possible that you might get another outcome to the story. So it's not even necessarily like I was lied to. It was that I didn't have that story as well as I should have, given how definitively I was talking about that. So, and that's shit that I need to work on, you know, and that's one of the things that I try to give you guys is the transparency of what I'm doing too, so that you guys don't feel duped when I get something wrong. I can try to explain to you how I arrived at the incorrect conclusion or incorrect report and get better at it. And hopefully you guys are along for the ride so that a few years from now, when I'm even better at this, I've only been doing this for a couple of years now, reporting that is, in a few years from now, when I'm a little bit better and more established as a reporter, somebody that people want to give information to, you guys can look at that. And we can all look back on that one time Brook Lopez's camp made me think he was going to the Lakers so he could get a few million dollars more from the Clippers. And yeah, it's this entire information industry, economy really. And managing that is always really interesting. But yeah, I don't really feel duped by the Lakers when I hear that they're trying to do certain things, and they don't wind up doing them. It's not that they weren't trying. It's that they weren't able to get that done. And it takes two people to make some of these deals happen. And, you know, whether or not you're able to convince that other side to say yes or not, that's what a lot of this kind of comes down to. And if the Lakers don't do some of the things that I say that they're getting ready to do or they're trying to do or whatever like that, if they don't do those things, it's because talks fell apart. Another team wanted something. The Lakers didn't want to give. They didn't want to cross a certain line in negotiations, whatever it is. And it just didn't pan out. And that's how it kind of goes sometimes. More often than not, honestly. All right. We have a question here from at Bashir_1. And the reason I'm answering this now ahead of or kind of changing up the order here is because there's proof here that he is subscribed to the show. So Bashir writes, your thoughts on the Lakers' fright of employing injury-prone players and that fright stopping them from employing half the league. It's all about risk management, right? There are some players that you're willing to look the other way on injury stuff because the potential value is there. If Joel Embiid was on a contract that was like half as expensive as his current contract, everybody around the league would be perfectly happy employing Joel Embiid, even given his injury history. But as Embiid is on one of these massive supermax contracts, and it extends years into the future, and he has that injury concern, nobody's really interested in trading for him or trying to bring him in or employing him. And you know, if I'm trying to find an example here. All right, so Ayton is another example here where he has had some availability issues. And for the Lakers, it's like, yeah, he might have those availability issues. But he also is a player who at one point was seen as a 30-ish million dollar player. Even if it was incorrect in seeing him that way, but now we can get him for eight and some change. Oh, that's funny. And in that case, the Lakers are willing to kind of look the other way on some of those injury concerns. A different Portland Trailblazers center, Robert Williams, is somebody that the Lakers have been interested in for a long time. But because of his injury concerns, and because the Lakers would have to literally trade something to get him, they don't want they aren't interested in sending out anything to bring in Williams, even if he might help if he's ever healthy. So it's starting point here isn't that the Lakers are completely terrified of anybody who has ever pulled a hammy before. It's just, you know, risk management. Now, are the Lakers more risk averse than other teams? I would probably say so. And I do think that that limits their talent pool in a way that can sometimes lead to missed opportunity. One of the examples of that, right, was Cam Whitmore, who came out of college, had some injury concerns, some real injury concerns coming out of college. And the Lakers, there were people who liked him as a talent more than Jalen Hood-Schifino within the organization. But eventually, the concern over Whitmore's medicals led them to drafting Jalen Hood-Schifino, who ironically, obviously got hurt and spent basically his entire Lakers tenure hurt. But it had the Lakers been willing to take a gamble on Whitmore, they would have gotten the better player who was actually productive at a position that they actually had need at. And that hurts them there, right? And one of the things that I'm really excited about whenever Guggenheim or AEG eventually and officially takes over is that they will spend to bring in the absolute best doctors and trainers and nutritionists and dietitians and strength and conditioning coaches, like all of that stuff. The Lakers are going to spend top dollar on those kinds of positions. And when you invest resources and immense resources with those kinds of things, it makes you that much more confident in the gambles that you eventually take. Now, does that mean that they will go all out and trade whatever they would have to trade to employ Joel Embiid, given his contract situation and everything that I talked about before? Maybe not. That's a risk that nobody seems all that interested in taking right now. So, my thoughts on it is that I would like to see the Lakers invest more into their infrastructure to be able to more confidently make some of those gambles. But until they do, and given how little they invest at it, I can kind of understand why they don't gamble on those things. But the tough thing is, if you start kind of looking for reasons to talk your way out of anything, like one of the things that I've kind of learned is I don't think the Lakers are all that confident in basically any decision that they make, unless it's like a home run, Rob Pelinka on the press release type of decision. The Lakers are very susceptible to paralysis by analysis. And I don't think, again, unless it's one of those Luka whatever they gave up to get him type of decisions, the Lakers are very, very careful. And I think if you look for enough reasons not to do certain things, you're going to miss opportunities. And with the way that the Lakers are kind of run, one of the things that I would like to see is, again, more investment into the infrastructure of the organization so that they can more confidently make some of these decisions that don't have to be home run decisions in the moment, can pay out greater dividends than some of those other, some of the decisions that they make while they're being more conservative. So, it's going like I cannot. It was funny. Miriam and I talked about it before we even went live, and we were just laughing at the fact that everybody seems to have forgotten that the Lakers were sold at the beginning of the summer. And I just cannot stress how great an impact AEG will eventually have whenever they officially take over, or even while Jeannie is operating as governor, what AEG will be able to do to supplement her and the people working with and for her with greater resources, so that maybe she's better at this job with those greater resources. Maybe Rob will be better at this job with those greater resources, because, you know, we've all been there. And you'll have conversations with your higher ups for a project, and you'll ask what kind of funding you can get for that kind of a project. And you get that answer back. And if you get less funding for that project than you would maybe like, but you do believe in the project, what winds up happening is you wind up picking up a lot of that slack yourself, right? If you really believe in the project. And what essentially, and I'm not saying this is definitely how this goes, but if Rob goes to Jeannie and says, "Hey, Jeannie, can we just get an actual NBA scout whose job it is just to monitor the NBA, not any, you know, we have scouts, but they also have these other jobs. Can we just have a specifically scouting department?" And if Jeannie comes back and says, "No, we don't have the funding for that," then Rob basically has to say, "All right, well, I guess we'll just kind of make do." But now if Rob goes to Jeannie and then Jeannie goes to AEG, or, you know, in this case, Mark Walter, and Jeannie asks, "Hey, Rob is interested in a scouting department. Here's the budget of what that would cost. What do you think?" And if AEG comes back and says, "Yeah, let's do it." And now all of a sudden the Lakers have that kind of funding and those kinds of resources to be able to say yes more often, they're going to be better at this stuff than they were, as recently as last year. It's funny. There was this conversation on Blue Sky the other day about Vox and about I forget the guy's name, but apparently, like, SB Nation, my former employer, they're trying to kind of reinvent Twitter again. Pete and I talked about this briefly the other day. And one of the things that I'll always kind of know SB Nation for is it's kind of a no company, where, you know, I'll say, you know, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? What do you think?" And it would almost feel like it was, the people at the very, very, you know, top of SB Nation, it was almost their job to say no to stuff. And what that winds up leading to is eventually, you know, I remember even it when I was at Locked On, and I was like, "Hey, what if we do like a regional Locked On LA show? And here's kind of my vision for it." And eventually, I don't know if they eventually did it or whatever, but it took them however long to do it. Well, I went to Vox about it too. And they weren't, they looked for reasons not to do it. And then I got here to Odyssey, and I was like, "Hey, this is what I'm kind of thinking, you know, for kind of a regional podcast network." And my bosses at Odyssey were like, "Absolutely. What are you thinking?" And I was like, "Well, we would probably need to start with a robust team of Lakers shows, and allow that to kind of lay the foundation of what we're trying to do here, and then use the kind of revenue that we generate with that Lakers content to take gambles on Dodgers stuff, which doesn't traffic as well in podcasts as Lakers do. It doesn't, maybe we could do, a Rams show, a USC football, UCLA basketball, or maybe just USC or UCLA type shows." And with Odyssey, it was like, "Yeah, let's find a way to do this." And that's how we got, you know, I was able to talk to Pete, and I was able to talk to Jovan, and that's how the Great Western Forum was born. And, as of right now, I think we make up like a pretty big percentage of our sports podcasts, as a whole, are these Lakers shows. And that's going to allow us to take some of these other gambles here moving forward. And, you know, for the Lakers bringing it back, when you look for reasons not to do stuff, and you become super risk averse, you're missing out by saying no those times. And I think, you know, the Lakers, by saying no to a scouting department, they oftentimes, I think, are a little behind the times in terms of intel, and that kind of hurts them. So, you know, whether it's injury prone players, whether it's whatever it is, you know, I would like to see the Lakers invest more in information so that whatever decisions they eventually make, they are more confident in making them and thus make more decisions and say yes to a few more things. All right. Quick question here. At KR Swish writes, hey, Anthony, seeing Aaron having the time of his life on Instagram made me realize it's been a long effing time. Is there a chance he comes back at some point? Please let the OGs know. Appreciate all the work you do. Thank you very much. So every time I go back home, I try to, you know, wrangle up as many of my friends in this industry as I possibly can. And because Aaron is just such a good dude, he invites us. He's a great chef, and he invites us over to his place to eat there and catch up. And I bring my kids along. They call him Uncle Aaron. And this last time we were talking, I was like, hey, man, it's been forever since we podcast. And he was like, yeah, you're right. So we're going to try to, at some point here, get him back on the show because yeah, I absolutely miss doing shows with him. And yeah, we need to fix how long it's been since we've done a show together. All right, let's take a look at some of these live comments to see if I've missed anything here. Mike Jones, would you rather have Dayron Sharpe or Robert Williams? Oof, man, that's a good question. So that's one of those tough questions, because one guy is a, like, Robert Williams is a better basketball player than Dayron Sharpe, but he never plays. Dayron Sharpe isn't as talented as Robert Williams, but he plays. So it just kind of depends on what your priority is going to be there. Now, for me, seeing as the Lakers already have Ayton, I would probably lean Williams, but I kind of agree with the Lakers in their not wanting to give up anything to trade for Williams. So I would kind of wait. I got to see what kind of contract Robert Williams is on. Robert Williams contract. So, all right. So he's on the last year of that contract. So he might get bought out at some point. And remember, I've talked to you guys a ton about this, where when guys reach that final year of their contract, teams will basically just say, yeah, we're just going to wait for that guy to expire. Or we'll wait for that guy to get bought out and, you know, give it a go at trying to land him in free agency on the buyout market. And, you know, fortunately here for the Lakers, because they're hard cap below the first apron, they'll be able to sign players that become available in the buyout market. And one of the things that I'm going to be kind of looking for is, you know, like right now the Lakers could send, it would be, let's just say, Maxi Kleba and Dalton Connect for Mark Williams. And that would get, you know, it would cross a few boxes off there. But if the Lakers say don't want to trade Dalton for Williams here, and eventually still want to, you know, in essence, trade Maxi for Robert Williams, what you could eventually do is just buy out Maxi and then wait for, or you know, if you hear that Robert Williams is going to get bought out, then you just buy out Maxi, you get in touch with Robert Williams, you say, hey, this is what kind of role we have in mind for you. Yeah, all we would need to do is buy this guy out. Then once you, again, totally legally, but once you hear back from Williams's people, or you get enough information to be confident that you'd be able to get Robert Williams, then you buy out whoever you need to buy out. And it essentially becomes a Maxi Kleba for Robert Williams type trade. And you can, you know, there's several types of players that this would work for. So, I mean, it's essentially what the Milwaukee Bucks did with Dame, where they didn't trade Dame to Indiana for Miles Turner, but because you bought out Dame, it essentially becomes like a Dame for Miles Turner and whatever other players they wound up signing using that financial flexibility. And no, it's not an official trade, but it becomes effectively a trade. And I think that's something that we should probably all keep an eye out for over the course of the season, especially with guys like Williams who are on the final year of their deal. Next question here comes from Preston Cook. Any update on Braun? Well, he seems to enjoy golf. Aside from that, I don't really know what kind of update I would be giving here. He's going to be a Laker on opening night. I've been pretty consistent on this all summer. I don't believe he's going anywhere. I even took it a step further in some of my reporting a few weeks ago when I said I think he's going to retire a Laker, whether it's after this season or the following year after that, or whenever it would be. But I think LeBron's going to play out this final year of his contract. And then I still think it's likelier than not that he re-signs if he's going to continue playing. And I also think that he's going to be pleasantly surprised by how good this team is, especially early in the season. And that makes it that much easier for him eventually to consider re-signing after this upcoming year. So as far as the update goes, I saw that he was golfing in the rain. That's always kind of a fun experience. And by fun, I mean awful. Golfing in the rain is just not very fun. Sometimes you just get caught out there. I live out here in Texas, and we get these weather systems that just go by really, really fast. So every so often, you just get caught in the rain. But yeah, golfing in the rain, not very fun. But yeah, and aside from that, I don't really have much else to say on LeBron. I don't think he's going anywhere. He's going to be the starting power forward on opening night. Oh, wrong button. Here we go. Let's see. Next one here. Mike Jones, do you think if Cam Thomas becomes unrestricted that the Lakers will do everything possible to sign him? I mean, no, because they don't really have much that they can actually do. And he also doesn't really fill a need. Like what we're kind of learning here is the NBA is kind of moving on from your scoring inclined combo guards who don't defend very much. I like Cam Thomas. He's a very good scorer. He's a pretty impactful player. But if he's looking for $30-something million a year, and then he becomes an unrestricted free agent, and whoever signs him to whatever less it'll be than $30 million a year, he's going to be gunning it while he's on that team to try to get that $30 million a year contract that he thinks he has earned. So I'm kind of good on Cam Thomas. I enjoy watching his scoring flurries, so long as they aren't against the Lakers, but I enjoy watching him happen against other teams. He's a fun offensive player, but he's not as impactful as he is talented, especially offensively. So I wouldn't do it. And for the Lakers, like, what would they do? They don't have the cap room to sign him. You could try to engage Brooklyn in a sign and trade type situation, which I would like to see them try. If they're going to do that, I would rather do that with like Quentin Grimes instead of Cam Thomas. But yeah, I This is kind of a boring answer to a lot of your guys' questions, because there are questions here in from Twitter too, right? Cool Beans asking, obligatory, are the Lakers done this offseason? Gregory Brown, any realistic trade the Lakers are actually interested in? Carlo Del Mundo writing, any Lakers trade rumors? I'm sorry, everyone. It's pretty much a wrap, I think, for this offseason. Unless there's some crazy development here. Everybody's just kind of waiting for the unrestricted free agency thing to figure itself out, whether it's those guys becoming available, whether it's those guys signing their qualifying offers, whether it's those guys agreeing to a deal. But everybody's just kind of sitting around waiting for Jonathan Kuminga, waiting for Cam Thomas, waiting for Quentin Grimes, waiting for Josh Giddey. And until we get more information on that situation, we're all just going to be stuck here watching some of the world's dumbest games of chicken. Let's go to the next question here, which comes from all right. So there's a lot of letters here. XXB. Ep Bo Op 91 XX. I've heard Trevor Lane and the K brothers on Lockdown Lakers talk about what they think Reeves will get next offseason. What do you think is a reasonable AAV for him, average annual salary? So I think he's going to get somewhere in the ballpark of 30 would be my guess. And I would be pretty comfortable with that number. Much higher than 30. Somebody asked me the other day, the last mailbag that we did, somebody asked me why I don't talk about things in terms of percentage of the cap. Part of the reason that I don't talk about it as percentage of the cap is because teams go above the cap, and the Lakers are almost always going to operate above the salary cap. So percentage of the cap is kind of tough when you say, like, so-and-so is getting 35% of the cap, so-and-so is getting 30% of the cap, so-and-so is getting 15% of the cap. And then eventually the listener, if they are listening really, really well, they'll be like, wait, you just gave me more than 100%, and that's kind of weird. So that's part of the reason. And then also it's just extra kind of arithmetic, and nobody likes math. But with Austin, any more than 30, it's just, I guess it would also depend on how long into the future that contract would go. Because you're kind of incentivized to, if you're going to pay Austin 30, you would almost prefer that be like a 4-year contract because of the cap increases. So if Austin is signing a $30 million a year contract with 5% raises or 10% raises, whatever raise that you give them every year, if the percentage increase of the cap exceeds those, the percentage of raise that you're giving Austin every year, that contract actually becomes a little bit more valuable the longer that it runs. So, yeah, starting AAV, I would probably say about 30. And if you go much above 30, I start to feel the willies a little bit. That's kind of where I kind of reside. Now, I've heard people say that, like, you know, he shouldn't even get 30. Look, he's going to be the second best player on a Luka Doncic team after LeBron retires. And second best players on playoff teams, they tend to get $30-ish million a year. Now, you could debate whether or not you would prefer that he be your third best player. And then if he's your third best player, maybe 30 is a little high, but Yeah, I would probably say 30 is around the ballpark that I'd be looking for. And honestly, like, I'd be pulling for Austin to get it. He's a cool story, man, and he's good people. So get paid, Austin. Let's see. Oh, here's a good question that I put on the rundown. So at Shazaho writes, realistically, do you think the Lakers could be a top five offense this upcoming season? And do you think they could be an above average defense with their current roster? If not either of those things, what do you say if their ceiling is offensively, defensively? All right. So the thing that will hold the Lakers back from being a top five offense, if they aren't one, is their shooting concerns. Austin, not the best catch and shoot threat. LeBron, not, the best catch and shooting threat. Laravia is good on the catch and shoot. Rui is pretty good on the catch and shoot. Marcus Smart, not that good at it. And you kind of go from there. You know, Gabe Vincent, streaky, and Dalton Connect, I don't think is going to play enough to help their 3-point shooting. If you're going to play Vando at all, you're really hurting in the 3-point shooting category. Ayton, not a stretch flat five. Obviously, Jackson Hayes, not a stretch five. And without getting up just astronomical numbers of threes, it's kind of difficult to keep up with the teams that are shooting that number of threes. Now, what I will say, and this is what I'm really going to be keeping an eye on this season, is how effective the Lakers are going to be in the half court. Like, just in terms of points per possession in the half court, that I think is going to be where the Lakers have to feast. You know, you have Luka, you have LeBron, you have Austin, Marcus Smart as a not even tertiary. I don't even know what word you would use for tertiary. I don't know. Like, but he's not a primary, he's not a secondary, he's not a tertiary one. And he's your fourth best creator in that starting group. And then you have Ayton, who's a really good finisher, in a variety of ways offensively. There's like the pieces are there for that group to be really bleeping good in the half court, so long as the strategy is solid, they actually call and run plays, and so long as Luka and LeBron are willing to operate in the half court together. So I would say that, you know, will they be a top five overall offense? Probably not. I would say top 10. But I do think, like, in terms of you know, clutch offense, when the game slows down and when you absolutely need a bucket, I think the Lakers are going to be really good there. And that matters a lot more come playoff time than being a run and gun offense that kind of runs up the score over the course of the regular season and gets into that top five conversation. Now, as far as defensively, it just depends on Luka, honestly, because he's going to play 35 plus minutes a night. And he is, you know, if he's going to be playing with LeBron, it's going to be difficult for him to guard to be hidden too much. How effectively will teams hunt Austin if they try to hunt Austin? How good is DeAndre Ayton actually going to be as a defensive anchor, if we're going to think of him that way? How much energy is LeBron going to have on defense, given that he doesn't have to expend too much energy or as much energy offensively? Will he figure out a way to kind of re-ration the amount of energy that he uses over the course of a game? Those are going to be the things that kind of go a long way in deciding how good the defense is going to be. So there's a lot of ifs there. And if you're just asking me, like, can the Lakers be solid defensively? I would say, yeah, they can be solid defensively. Will they be, like, all right, you're asking me if they can be league average or no, above average. That would make them a top 10 to 15 defense in the league. I'll say yeah. They will be. I think I don't think they can be as good of a team without being. Well, this is a stupid thing to say. They aren't going to be very good if they aren't good on both sides of the ball. But what I mean is, like, the Lakers. I don't think they're going to blow anybody out of the water offensively. And if you're not going to be just an overwhelming force offensively, then you have to be at least average, if not above average, defensively to be good. And I think it's a good team. So I think they'll be above average defensively, and they'll be legitimately good offensively. All right, let's see. All right. I think I'm going to end it here. 50 minutes in, and I haven't been canceled yet. So I'm going to go ahead and end it there. So, thank you, everybody, for the questions and for the conversation here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. And please hit that subscribe button on my way out here. If you guys missed anything, you can go back here, obviously, and listen to or watch the episode in its entirety here on YouTube. And then if you prefer it in podcast form, you can tune in to it. Man, I'd gone almost the full episode without that like hiccup verb thing. But anyway, have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and I will talk to you Monday. Tomorrow. Harrison and me tomorrow. Have a good one.